Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everyone. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Mercer Island, Washington. I would like to also introduce Kim Lakin, who's on my host team this evening, and Kim is from Colorado. We are both NASCA family members, and we are both adult survivors of child abuse. Tonight, we have a very special show. The type of show is a special guest night, and our very special guest is Geraldine Cullum, Jerry for short, from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'll tell you a little bit more about Jerry before we bring her on live on the show, but before I do so, I wanted to invite anyone interested in joining our panel tonight to call in. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, the number is area code 646-595-2118, and my co-host Kim will greet you on our back line and welcome you into the show. You don't have to have any experience being a panel member to call in, just a curiosity to do so. As a panel member, you will have an opportunity to interact with our special guest, Jerry, and ask her a question or offer a comment about her story. Tonight is about Geraldine telling us about her experiences. So without further ado, before we continue on with scan number 3006, I wanted to tell you a bit more about NASCA and NASCA's mission, because as you know, NASCA is focused on child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood sexual abuse and trauma, including assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing not only child abuse, but child sexual abuse, abbreviated CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So I'll give you the number one more time. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Please call in and support our amazing guest, Jerry Cullum. So I wanted to tell you a little bit more about Jerry. She provided us with a wonderful biography. As I mentioned, she's from Indianapolis, Indiana, and Geraldine tells us as a child, she did not, growing up, she did not like visiting with her grandparents, especially on her father's side, especially her grandfather. To quote Jerry, she said, You see, he didn't kiss me as most of my family members did, for example, on the cheek or the forehead. Instead, he would stick his tongue in her mouth. One trip on the way home to Indiana, my sister and I heard sad words about Grandpa. I tried to speak up saying, "I don't like the way Grandpa kisses me." And my mom spoke sternly saying, "That's enough, that's nonsense." States Geraldine, "I remember saying, I don't like the way he puts his fingers in my baby sister's diapers either." She remembers her mom's words, "Now hush, you're putting shame on your father," and, "That's enough, that's ugly, hush now, or we'll stop and get a switch." Geraldine shares with us that she fell into sexual addiction, alcohol, food addiction, and her young adult life to her midlife. She tells us the recovery process has been a lifetime of moving from one recovery group to another, never really succeeding until she found her sister of joy, our Barbara Joy Hansen. She opened her eyes to the materials in the recovery program Barbara Joy Hansen facilitates and says, "Jerry, I don't remember my abuse anymore. Not until I built my timeline, which opened the floodgates to my memory." She's written two books. They're called Beyond the Darkness, Healing from Sexual Abuse, and Listen to the Cry of the Child. She states, "At first, I rejected even the thought of sexual abuse being present in her life. Now she helps others in her surrounding community to find their own words. And in the future, she wishes to build a safe home for teens and young adults." Wow. Well, without further ado, Jerry, I'm going to invite you on, and I've unmuted your mic. So, Jerry, I just want to say thank you for being on with us this evening.
Thank you for the nice introduction. I wanted to clarify, though, that Barbara Joy Hansen did write Listen to the Cry of the Child. There were other writers, but those other two books were just what she offered to me to help train me and get me to the person where I'm at today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification, because I thought, you know, I've heard those books before, and the titles are very familiar, and I know Barbara Joy Hansen, obviously, so thank you for the clarification. I do appreciate that.
Well, it can be misunderstood, and I don't want that misunderstood. Barbara Joy wrote Listen to the Child, Cry of the Child. Beyond the Darkness, Healing for Sexual Abuse was written by a girl named Cynthia. I do believe her name is Kubetin. It's Kubetin. Yeah.
Thank you.
I want to make sure I'm saying the name right.
Thank you. And these two books are outlined in your biography, which is also, that information is actually included in the description of this show. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the scan number is 2006. And just to those listening, just so they're aware, you go on the NASCA website under the show schedule and you go to tonight's date of September 12th. This show will be archived. And so you'll be able to not only read again Jerry's bio, but also those two books, Beyond the Darkness, Healing for Sexual Abuse. The author is Barbara Joy Hansen. And the second book, Listen to the Cry of the Child, are mentioned in the description. So if anyone needs clarification, they are right there. But thank you, Jerry, for clarifying that. I know we like to give credit where credit is due.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't want it misrepresented. Cynthia's done a very good job with detailing the symptoms of abuse in the front of her book, the first few chapters. And I really appreciate the way it's written. It helped me to stop rejecting the thought that something bad happened. When I grew into my young adulthood, I just thought I was a bad girl. I was a bad kid.
So,
you know, because I had suffered sexual promiscuity, and mm-hmm. that's what my parents taught me, that that was just being a bad girl. So,
Jerry, and I did not do a very good job of outlining how we sort of roll out the show, because it is 90 minutes. So I don't mean to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
I know you have so much great information to share with us. And typically, you know, I'd like to start the first third of the show is maybe if, and I know some of it you provided to us in your bio, but you know, to start from, you know, your earliest childhood, you know, and your bio to start there and basically in infancy. But just so those that are listening, to paint the picture of you're born into this family and to maybe help us understand, you know, the family unit where you were born and then as your experiences started to develop. If we go chronologically, if you're comfortable with that, that might help things flow a little bit better. For me as a host, to walk through your body.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Both my parents came from a Baptist background in Kentucky. They came up to Indiana to build a new home, a new community, to get away from the jobless society down there in Kentucky. My dad found a job here. And then married my mom. He moved my mom up here and then married her. I was born in 1962. Those were times where, you know, things were different. The culture was different. We did the best we could, it was told, you know. I fell sick when I was 18 months old and died about three times, they said, one night. And then I got better after that. But as I grew up, I remember I have back flashes. You know, I never felt comfortable around my grandpa. I was encouraged to sit on his lap and encouraged to let him kiss me.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is as a young child, I didn't understand why he kissed me the way he did. And we heard things words that were spoken that we didn't understand, of course, but now I do. And I've heard from my family that, yes, he served time. He had done something to somebody out there in Kentucky and had to serve time for it, where this was a subject of abuse, that he was, you know, trying to do something. Well, my mother and dad were very judgmental, were very embarrassed. And if you understand the culture, they grew up in a Baptist church. They just didn't like talking about bad things. But on the way home from the Kentucky trip that we used to make once a year, from visiting, we heard the sad words about Grandpa and how he was doing, you know, they just didn't understand it and didn't believe it and wouldn't talk about it no more. And I just spoke up and I said, you know, I don't like the way my Grandpa kisses me. And my mom spoke, you know, sternly saying, that's enough. That's nonsense. You love your Grandpa. And then I remember saying, I don't like the way he puts his fingers in my baby sister's diapers either. And my mom just said, hush, you know. But I just, you know, I sternly said, I don't like the way he kisses me. But my mom, you know, after I got my words out, she just, hush, you're putting shame on your dad. And that always bothered me. I never liked being a bad girl, you know. She threatened me with a switch, so I just had to shut up. I didn't like switches. I did not like them at all. I would do anything to avoid them. But, you know, as a young teen, I fell into the desires of a normal child, but I fell into desires that were wrong, I was seeking out men for the wrong reason. Later on, I fell into sexual addiction, alcohol abuse, food addictions, and addictions of, you know, different sorts. And that lasted me until I was around my 50s. Let's just put it bluntly. It was I sought recovery from a mental illness that I had, and I had to wean myself back off of a lot of drugs that they placed me on. And that's when I really started succeeding with my recovery and developing my timeline and things like that. But it took me a long time.
Do you mind if I just stop you real quick and ask you a few questions? And I'm sure that my co-host, Kim, has some questions for you as well. Because there's certain things that you said really early on as you were explaining some of the things and expanding on some of the things I showed in the bio that I, you know, just wanted to highlight and just struck me. And the first thing is that, interestingly, even from a very, very young age, you inherently knew that something was wrong with the way Grandpa kissed you. And,
absolutely.
And so the first thing is that that really resonated with me because I also always knew that something wasn't right. And I think, you know, we do have this inherent intuition, even young, that something is amiss, or we observe something. You observe Grandpa putting his fingers in your sister's diaper. And so, you know, even though we know, we begin to question, because then the next thing you shared was your mom just said, you know, almost like her reaction was the audacity of you to even bring it up, you know, almost like, girls don't say that. Hush. Not only that, we might going to hush you even though you're speaking the truth. I'm going to silence you and stifle you, but you're going to get punished for speaking the truth, you know, which is, you know, it's a betrayal and a neglect of, you know, parents should be, you know, protecting their child, not punishing them for advocating for themselves at even such a young age. And so that, you know, I think I just wanted to thank you for sharing that, number one. Number two, tell you you're not alone, because everything you just said resonated with me out of a similar experience. And I think the third thing is, once we start beginning to doubt ourselves or these things become our normal, you know, we can live in these patterns, like you mentioned, for so long. When we have, you know, those in positions of authority or our parents telling us that we have crossed some line, you know, in voicing something that, you know, is clearly wrong, that we believe, you know, we begin to believe that we're not correct. And I think, and I said, you know, a lot of adults are walking around thinking, well, I mean, I didn't realize that some of the conduct that I experienced was wrong until a couple years ago, and I'm 52 years old. So I just want to thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of times, you know, these experience, we know inherently in the onset, you know, and then as life happens, you know, they become buried. So I wanted to say, you know, thank you so much for mentioning that. The question I had was, so you mentioned a sister, a younger sister. Did the two of you ever discuss this, even in your earlier years? Was there ever any communication between the two of you about not feeling comfortable around Grandpa?
No. Although my sister is mentally ill, she was classified mentally ill, and she needed help at a very young age, I'll be honest. She was in and out of crying spells and constantly scared of things, and I wish I would have known I wish I would have had some kind of a mentor that could have helped me with her as a young child to get help. But I didn't know as a young child that I needed help as well. We've never talked about it. I've asked my sisters if they ever felt uncomfortable. One of my sisters says, yeah, I didn't really like the way he put his hands on my chest. But me and my younger sister have been afar. Just due to my own misunderstandings of mental illness, basically. I always, there was a point when I would judge her, and I've asked for forgiveness of that, that's for sure. but I've never been able to talk with her about this. There was times when I know she was traumatized in other instances, but I've never been able to speak with her. I hope someday I can to help her get into a recovery mode. But at this point in my life, I'm just starting to get my feet on the ground. On the ground as far as helping other people. And it's not always wise to help the people that are related to you anyway. I think she probably would do better with somebody at a professional level, which is what she's been doing all this time, but perhaps she's not met the right person. I was just blessed by meeting Barbara Joy Henson.
Yeah.
I was just really blessed. She's been a wonderful mentor in my life. I've reread and reread her book and thought, wow, okay. So, but yeah, she puts a lot of points out there that every time I read her book, it's just there's something new that pops out, just like when you read the Bible, something new. So it's just, I was just very blessed to meet Barbara Joy Henson, but I was also blessed to have a good husband. I married my now husband in 2003.
That is awesome. That is awesome. We're going to get to that in the second segment. We're going to talk about you know the next years. But I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm smiling by hearing that. I had one more question regarding back to your childhood, and I am going to bring on Kim. I'm sure she has a question before we move forward, if that's okay. But my last question was when you met. That you were really, really sick as an infant. And the first thing that popped into my head was there any correlation between your treatment, your maltreatment and your health? Did you ever think about, was there any connection to that?
I wonder that myself. I wonder that myself. My grandpa died when I was roughly around 17, 18 months old. And it was very hard on my mom. She says that I carried a summer cold, and it went into pneumonia, and that's her explanation of it. However, I've learned since having my babies that babies that are breastfed don't get summer colds that lead into pneumonia, unless there was some sort of neglect going on. And she could have inadvertently, because of her grief, over her dad, losing her dad. So I don't know. I have not judged that. I don't try to. I know my mom, she did her best. She did what she knew how to do. And that's how she understood it, was the fact that I had a summer cold and it just went into pneumonia. But that the summer that my grandpa died, it was very hot. It was in the heat of the summer that was down there. And I can remember coming home and vomiting everywhere, and I can remember I get back flashes of being in the hospital, and, they stuck me in an incubator, and the popsicle sticks, I'd stick them in a little hole in the incubator and break them. I can remember some instances with that. However, I've been told that that was just my imagination, so I don't know. my mom would tell me that that's just your imagination a lot. And that is how she approached my words. I mean, that was just how she approached my words all my life. by telling, and when the instant on the way home that I told my mom about Grandpa's kisses was, how could you say such a thing? Don't let your imagination get by, away from you, and just hush. It's not, that's ugly. Those words stuck in my head all my childhood life. That's ugly, and I became ugly. I became an ugly person, but I'm far from ugly. I just rebelled. I did forget. I mean, we do forget about our abuses. We push them away. And I rejected the very fact that I had been abused and neglected. But I know that happened. I've always known it, and I didn't really realize how much abuse it was until, you know, I found this book, and I had all these symptoms. Well, several of the symptoms. I won't say all of them. But, yeah, I had nightmares. I was withdrawn. I was always the mature little girl. I would play violently sometimes. I had low self-esteem. I didn't like undressing. I didn't like undressing at all. I didn't like that at all. When I went to high school, I still didn't like gym. I hated undressing in gym and, you know, with all the other girls. Even though we had all the same parts, I didn't like it. I had early sexual promiscuity, the fear of being alone. I didn't like the fact that I might be alone if I stayed single. my sister had the crying spells, which really tends to make me think that she has the signs too. I didn't really have an appetite, you know. I would just eat and gorge and gorge and overeat. I had a vaginal discharge that my doctor would ask my mom about, and they would secretively talk. I had, you know, that happening, and that's a sign, you know. And the doctor was severely talking to my mom, but she would never talk about it. And he would just give me medicine, and I'd be fine. Mama would say, just take your medicine, you're going to be fine, you know. But I remember my underwear would be stained where my sisters were not. And mom had a hard time getting the stains out. So, so there was definite signs there. And that's how I, when I seen the signs in this book, and I got to doing my timeline, I started putting it together. And I remember, you know, I started remembering the flashbacks and stuff again. But, you know, mind you, these flashbacks had been gone for some time. I had buried it so deep. Yeah. I rejected my parents, their philosophy, their religion. You know, there was a lot of anger there, a lot of frustration, and I became a bad girl, drinking, smoking, doing whatever. Boys, that was just, I was a bad girl. And yeah. I judged myself, and I shamed myself. But the shaming part was really coming from my mother, because she told me, that's ugly. Shame on you for talking like that as I was a young child. Shame on you for, you're supposed to be the role model for your sisters. Shame on you. She didn't realize what she was doing. But she shamed me for wanting to shave my legs and my armpits. She shamed me for wanting to put makeup on. Shame on you. You're not a very good role model for your sisters. And all that wound up into some very low self-esteem, anger. I was just frustrated, and I rebelled. I went out and bought with my allowance the razors that I needed to shave my legs and my armpits. And I did it behind my back, my mom's back. And when she found out about it, she went all over the place with it. It was horrible. But, you know, those kind of things happened. I have talked to my mom about it. And she apologized. And she said, well, your grandpa was unlearned. And I thought, you know, that's another excuse, because he knew better. He had certain time for it. So, I mean, he kept it going clear up until I was like 12, 11 or 12.
He served time for it?
He served time for doing something to my cousins. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. that he had done something to some girl there in town and served time for it. And then later on, it come down to the fact that he had done something to my cousin, and he served time for that. So,
wow.
Yeah, he knew better. And my mom says right. He was unlearned. Okay, so, you know, it's a puzzle that's I'm still unraveling.
Right.
You know, when you, we have a judgmental society today, and we live by falsehoods, it seems like. I have a gentleman friend that I listen to quite often, and he tells a story about the society. It's a tribal society, and the tribesmen got married, had babies, but other tribes would come in, and there was an evil tribe that came in on this young man that had a young son and a wife, and they slaughtered his wife and took his son. And he grieved heavily for that. He even went so far as to find another village that had been ravaged like his by the same evil tribe. And he picked up ashes and put them in a pouch, thinking that was his son. Because all the tribesmen told him, oh, your son's probably, you know, he's dead. He's probably gotten killed, just like your wife got killed. And so he actually believed his son was dead. Well, later on, his son comes back and knocks on the door. And the guy's asleep. It's in the middle of the night. He's asleep. And he says, Daddy, I'm home. He's laying there in bed with his ashes by his side because he carried it around. No, my son is dead. Go away. You're trying to trick me. The son kept on trying over the night. Three times he tried, and then he walked away. So he had grown to believe in that falsehood that his son was dead. So his son was dead to him, and there was no other result. And I believe we are trained as a child to believe in certain ways, and we believe that's the way it should go.
Yeah.
And it's hard to recognize the truth. Okay? His son walked away from the household after that. He was truly dead for him, and he never saw him again. So these falsehoods that we're raised up in, we truly believe are okay and they're right, and we'll fight for them. We'll even go to the extent of not believing the truth when we hear it. And I fought after hearing the truth from my cousin saying, that shouldn't happen, you shouldn't do this, you know, because I did talk to my cousin about it. And she actually witnessed it one night when we were spending the night up in the loft one year. But, you know, after that, I just didn't go back again. I just knew something was wrong. And I couldn't accept the fact that my mom and dad were abused and neglected of this. I couldn't accept the fact that they didn't believe me. I had heard that my imagination is just my imagination. So I just believed, yeah, it's okay. You know, and I believed that falsehood.
That is why, you know, it's all in your head was a continual
yeah.
dialogue.
Yeah, I don't know why you want to think that way. You're putting shame on your dad. I mean, that's just got to be your imagination. I don't know why you think that way. And it's come out today. I mean, not even a few, but maybe half a year ago or so. Well, he wasn't learned At least she didn't put me off saying it was my imagination.
At
least she accepts the fact that that is the truth of what happened. And that made me feel so much better, you know, that she actually didn't deny me or didn't say that's your imagination anymore, you know. So, but it took me all this time. I'm 60 years old.
Well, you know, and that's and congratulations for being where you are. I mean, that is,
yes,
that is something
it is.
This is something to celebrate.
Yeah.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And I want to bring on Kim, my co-host, though, because I know she's probably got questions. And
absolutely. I'm sure she does.
Great job at really expanding on the childhood and just in so many different ways. And I'm sure she's got some questions or comments. So, Kim, I just want to invite you in if you have a question or comment for Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Kim.
Hey, first of all, just want to say that I'm really sorry that happened to you. I know that we can show, and not most of us have experienced that kind of thing because we're all survivors, not in the same way, but I can really resonate a lot with several things that you've said. And just one of them, but the main, you know, glaring one is that your mom said, you know, hush, that's not going to, you know, that's not good. Don't bring shame on your father or whatever, you know, that's betrayal as a child. Because
yeah.
You want so much to please your parents and be, you know. So, you know, that's, of course, you've got to all these issues to deal with. I mean, my mom did the same thing, basically, when I was, and it was my stepdad. And she just said, oh, it happens, basically, is what she said.
Yeah.
So I applaud you so much for deciding that's not going to continue on and that you're going to get the help that you need. So,
I'm working on it.
That are cheering for you.
I'm still working on it. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I like to say I'm going to be working on it for the rest of my life. I believe that. I don't think it's going to be something that I can just stop. I mean, I take breaks from maybe seeing somebody for a while or, you know, going to the psychiatrist, but I know it's going to be something that I have to deal with for the rest of my life. And it is. It's that big betrayal. So how many, I guess one of my questions is then, how many siblings did you have? You said you had an older sister and a younger. Is that just what you had in your family?
I have two younger sisters. I have two younger sisters. Okay. They're about 4 years from me. And my baby sister's about, my middle sister's about 2.5 years, and my baby sister's about 4 years from me. That's about right. So, it's a sad thing when we go through our lives with falsehoods built in. But it's just, it's the way, I guess, that culture, that the upbringing that my mom and dad had, that bred them. And, you know, we're just now waking up to that. It's sad. But it's part of that generation, I think. Because I find a lot of people my age are going through the same steps that I'm going through and realizing, wow, okay, so that was really wrong. And we love our parents. We love our parents, and we don't want to accept the things sometimes. So we reject them, and then we push the judgment on ourselves by saying, oh, I just was a bad girl. And in true reality, it wasn't that I was a bad girl. It wasn't that I was a bad girl. I just had no other way of processing it in my mind. You know, my parents couldn't be bad people. They couldn't make any mistakes. But that's not true either, is it? I think parents do make mistakes. Even if they do have a loving background, parents make mistakes. I mean, I've given birth to three children, okay, I should say, and I have two boys and one girl. And I've made mistakes, and I can see my mistakes rising. But just keep in mind, I was a damaged person, and I had babies. So it's very important for us to teach, you know, people not to have babies while they're young until they get through some of their healing processes. I think that's very important. I taught all three of my kids to not have babies before they were 18. I just told them, don't bring home babies, period.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't do it. I just told them, you got to make your recovery steps first. Be your own true, authentic self first, and then find a partner to join in with you, and then build your family, which they've all three done. They've all three went to college, so I've done that part right. One did not finish, but he's a genius, and he's too smart for college. He just told me that a little while ago. He says, I don't need college, Mom. I can do anything I want. And he's doing it. He's making a killing. So, but he did get into college. It was just he just didn't finish it.
Yeah.
He found his career without it. So, but yeah, it's stunningly difficult. It's a numbing effect when you finally realize that you really did suffer neglect and abuse, because you think your parents are so good and golden as a child, they could never, ever harm you. And I still feel that way sometimes. So Mom would never harm me, but yet I know there's instances where she was told, don't do that. Don't do that to Jerry, you know. But she did it anyway. She still to this day believes that the switch in the bell is some kids need that. And I know that's just not true, Mom. And she'll sit there, and she'll stifle herself, and she won't say anything else to me. But it's just something that she's been bred to believe, I guess. But we shouldn't be switching and hitting our kids. That's violence. I mean, that's just, you know, that's been proven to be violent and abusive. So, you know, we're supposed to.
But it was so normal.
Yeah. But, you know, back then, I guess it was normal for you to get a switch in if you got out of line or stepped on the wrong step hole, you know, or steeple or something, you know. It was just one of those things. So I've gotten through all that. I know that I'm still in recovery, though. That is just that's a continuous thing. I think I'll be there for the rest of my life, like you said. It's not always the easy thing, and we like to think we're recovered, and then we turn around and find something else, you know, that we need to work on. So. It's just one step at a time. I'm very encouraged by NASCA's website. I don't know, but I have had people in my community say, I listened to your show, because I was on once before, and they had listened and they applauded me, you know. But then I've also had comments of negativity, like, why do you put yourself through that? So it's all part of growing. You know, getting the word out, telling other people, you know, this shouldn't have happened to you. That's why I tell my story, because I think some people really do understand what I'm talking about, and they wake up and they fight for their own right to freedom, you know, in that respect. I guess it's freedom. I don't know if that's the right word or not. But the first marriage I had was very damaging, all because I was full of hurt and I didn't know how to pull out of it. This marriage that I have now is very wonderful. I have a good relationship with God now. I'm able to attend church, where when I was younger, I hated church. I hated all thoughts of any type of religious community. I rejected every aspect of my parents' teachings when it came to the Bible and stuff, because I couldn't understand why would God do this to me, you know, why was I put through all this, you know, I was angry. But now I have a wonderful life, and life is beautiful to me. This all started, you know, after I met my husband that I have now, William Cullum, and I give him a lot of credit because he's put up with me, but we have both grown. We've both recognized abuses in our lifetime, our childhood, and we've worked ourselves through it, but I couldn't have done it without him. Because at first I didn't want to accept that I had ever been abused. I thought my parents were gold and they just never did anything wrong. But telling a child that that's just your imagination, stifle it, or that's ugly, don't do that, you know, that just puts blaming and shaming words on them. A young child doesn't know how to handle the words. That's ugly. You know, they judge themselves. Oh, I'm ugly. Or shame on me. I shouldn't have done that. I was a bad girl. And really, I wasn't a bad girl. I've had my other family members say I was never a bad girl to them. I mean, in their eyes. But I remember as a child, I always thought I was a bad girl. I was ugly. So we take on those words eternally inside of us, and that's how come we build blocks. I mean, we can build blocks, you know, memory blocks, because we don't like the fact that ugliness really happened. Think, you know, we don't like it ourselves, and we don't know how to express ourselves after being told that's our imagination and that never happened, and you know. We have blocks, and we don't want to suffer that damage anymore. Until you go through your timeline, though, some people call it inventory. I think other people have called it different things to me, but I just think of inventory and timeline because that's what it is to me. My manuscript is nothing but a timeline. And eventually that's going to be a book. You know, just like Barbara Joy Henson's book. That's kind of like her timeline and how things happened to her. So, you know, one day someone will read my book, eventually, when I get it written. And, wow, okay, that's how I felt, you know, and that's going to make me feel good that I was actually able to help them. Today, I have plans on building a halfway house, I mean a safe house for people, for young ladies specifically, even single parents. I want to help them recover from their addictions, their mental illness. I was told as a young mother that I was mentally ill, I was told that I'd be on medicine for the rest of my life. Well, that was a fib or a lie. I'm not on medicine now. And I moderate, you know, my mood swings very successfully, I've been told, by my husband. He says he doesn't see anything wrong with the way I, you know. So that was a lie. You know, my mother kept on telling me at that point, take your medicine. You've got problems, and your imagination gets a hold of you. And, you know, there that word goes again, imagination, you know. So I think what was going on was they were building the disability within me, without knowing it, and as a young girl. And maybe, perhaps, this is what happened to my sister Linda as well. The whole parent training cycle, if it's broken with neglect and abuse, then the child is broken, and then we have to repair our own child, our own inner child, as adults, and it causes us to suffer for years. I'm 60 years old, and I'm just realizing that. I've already raised 3 children. Now, they are successful, but they have not found their mates in life, and they're in their 30s. I don't know if I was the perpetrator with them, to be honest with you. I don't believe I was, but I do know being on drugs from mental health caused a lot of problems for me. I was a zombie. I couldn't parent my children. And at that time, I was married to Bill, my husband now, and he helped me through that parenting cycle a lot. So, working through my recovery process, it's going to take to the rest of my life, the end of my life. I know it will. But we can help others break their cycle earlier by telling our stories.
And that is exactly what you are doing. That is such a huge part of, I think, the healing process. And when I get the question, if you could recommend, how do I start? I would say, tell someone your story. You don't need to come on NASCA. But I think you had said the word freedom. And I think that was, it's a very profound way to define telling your story, because we're able to take what has been suppressed and really bring it outside of us. And, put that truth out into the world, which is what has been really suppressed and within us for so long. And so you had said, the freedom, and I think that it is absolute freedom to release the truth. And it's such a huge step as well, because as you've mentioned, the suppression happens for many, many reasons. Some of it's denial, some of it's being shamed, some of it's, not wanting to disappoint. There's just so many different reasons. Even things makes it real. But so what you're doing is, I just think it's such a huge step for so many different reasons, the freedom and also the example. You had said, well, maybe I'm not the one to counsel my siblings. Well, maybe not. Who am I to judge? But it's an invitation, and it's an example. It's an invitation. And a permission, because I think a lot of times we don't feel, we hold back because, we were the bad girl, we weren't that permission to actually speak the truth. And you've given that invitation, which I think is what better, gift to someone's sibling than to be the first one, to speak. And to give that invitation. Yeah. So I just wanted to really applaud you for that, because I think that is so brave.
Thank you.
Truly.
Well, it's very hard. It's very hard to talk to my sisters about this still, because I don't want to hurt them. But I want them to know what happened. And one day I will be able to talk to them. I'm waiting for the door to open. It's tough. It was a hard door to open with my mother. But once it was open, she absolutely did apologize. She had no idea that it happened. And she just said, well, I'm so sorry. And her excuse for him was he was unlearned. So she still had an excuse for him. But at least I got an apology. You know, it was like, wow, my mom actually validated that it's not my imagination. And I'm not being a bad girl by talking about it, okay? So that was a release for me. And I just thanked her. You know, I just told her, I said, well, thank you for not saying that it's my imagination and I shouldn't talk about it because it is something that happened. And she just took a deep breath and went, you know, and shook her head and scratched her head. And I was like, okay, she's not going to defile me. I'm not going to let her hurt me no more. And when I have my talks with her, that's the first three things I have to think about. I'm an adult. She cannot harm me.
Yeah.
You know, I have to put that in my head before I can go and visit with her and talk to her. Because it just, her words come out and she doesn't mean no harm, but that's just how she was raised.
I hear words. That is wise counsel. And I think a lot of people that are listening or who listen to this archive show are going to really benefit from that, because many, many of us have to remind ourselves that,
yeah,
you know, we become those little children again. Parents are powerful.
You get in front of your parents and you're just like this little girl again, and it's like, oh, no, I'm the adult, you know, and her words cannot harm me any longer, and I'm not going to take those words, and if she does say them, I will make sure she understands that that is not what I, you know, that is not helping me for her to say that. I've actually told her, I said, Mom, that doesn't help me for you to make excuses, or that doesn't help me for you to say those things. I've told her that. Because, you know, it just doesn't help me, you know. And I'm an adult, and you cannot tell me, you know, I've actually had to tell her one time, you cannot tell me that that is true, because I have been educated in other areas in my life, and I know that is not true. I could make several examples. She would soak her feet. She would encourage us to soak her feet, foot baths, okay. But she would soak her feet for hours. And our healthcare physicians would tell us today, 10 minutes is a lot, you know, as long as you need to soak your feet. She would soak her feet for hours and lose toenails. But she thought she had to soak her feet, you know, if she would feel good about her feet being, you know, soaky wet, you know, and her skin would get all pigeoned, and then she would quit. But she would lose a toenail in the water, and, well, at least that dirt's all gone, you know. It's like, oh, my goodness. And I'm just now getting her to see, well, a few years ago I got her to see that that was damaging to her feet and it wasn't helping her feet. And she stopped doing it finally. But it took me a long time to get her to stop soaking her feet until her toenails fall off. She has a severe fungus, and she would constantly scrape until all that stuff was gone, and she would actually scrape her toenails off. That was a complete falsehood that she believed that she needed to do that, you know, but that's what she believed at that time. And now she still has the foot fungus, don't get me wrong, but she's seeking care for it through a doctor. So she's getting care for it at least. She wouldn't do it for a while, but she actually is seeking health care for it. I applauded her for that. But, yeah, that's just the old-fashioned thing that she used to do, you know. She would make me sit my feet in a bath, and for however long she thought that I needed to take my foot in the bath, keep my feet in the bath. And I didn't like how my toes felt. okay? Just that right there told me there was something wrong with it when I didn't like the way my foot I didn't like the way my grandpa felt when he touched me, you know, as a young child either. So our parents can do things that are culturally built within their mindset that are totally wrong, totally false. When we hear the truth, we learn the truth, and we speak the truth, that doesn't mean our parents are always going to believe us firsthand. My mom didn't believe me for years that she shouldn't be soaking her feet for more than 10 minutes. She did not believe me for years until finally, I think it was a doctor that told her she shouldn't be soaking her toenails until they come off. But then she quit. But it took her a long time to get that in her head. And it takes years for our mindset to change. And I know this is a little bit around the corner here, but when we suffer from mental illness or alcohol abuse or drug addictions, it takes a long time for us to realize it's not our fault. There was something going on in our childhood. There was something that caused this. And then we get down to the nitty-gritty of it. And by that, I mean the recovery process. Once we get that timeline written and we start dealing with the ugly stuff, then it comes awry, and then we can heal. Does that make sense?
And, you know, that these manifestations that you just mentioned are symptoms of,
yes,
you know, that are underlying that need to be addressed. And, you know, you shared that with your mom about her soaking her feet in Epsom salt to the point where her toenails would fall off. And, you know, what struck me, it just sounds like self abuse, you know. That's self abuse. And I'm just,
yeah. Well, she did suffer spousal abuse. Yeah, she did. My dad was very abusive in verbal. He would verbally bully her and things of that nature. Yeah, she suffered some abuses. And I witnessed it, you know, me and my sisters witnessed it. I didn't learn about bullying and how hard it was on you until I was way up into my adulthood. But I knew there had been something wrong with it. But my mom was bullied because my dad was bullied as a child. My grandparents on my dad's side was very, very strict in religious ways. And abusive, and according to the family that I know today, my aunt, let's just make an example of the aunt, she was always, well, she had four children by four different men, and one of her children turned out to be a child from her own child. She molested her son. And when I talked to her a day about that, she don't remember it. She's blanked it all out. And she said the doctors gave her medicine to make her forget. So the stories that come out of that family is horrendous. Okay? This is how I learned how horrible my grandparents were on my father's side, was from this aunt. And my cousins, her children told me these stories. But my dad was abused. When he aged and grew older, he showed symptoms of the abuse that at that time I didn't know of. I wasn't educated in that. But now I am. He would not let mom touch him. But he would let the nurses touch him. That right there was a clue to me when he got older that he had been abused. And my dad would bully her. So it's just a cycle. It's just that cultural background that they've been raised in. So we need to forgive it, but tell the truth about it. It doesn't mean I hate my mom. It doesn't mean I hate my dad, which I don't. I'll be honest with you. I love my parents. But I do realize that they made mistakes. And I won't lie about it. I won't sugarcoat it any longer. I used to. I'll be honest with you. I used to. But I can't no more. Not when I see what it's done to me. The cycles that I've had to go through have been damaging to people around me. And I can't fake it anymore is what you would call it. You would fake it. Like, I'm okay. No, I'm really not. But, yeah, it's hurtful.
Well, I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for making I think it's just the point that you made, I think it's profound. And I have said the same thing, you know, myself. And I want to reiterate what you just said. When we speak the truth about our child or about our abuse, about our childhood abuse, it doesn't mean you hate your parents. You're a loving
right.
person. You've obviously given your parents to your parents. You can state the truth and still love your parents. And
yeah.
Hey, you know, it's not a betrayal to say the truth of what happened. And you can still be a loving daughter because your recovery is in the spirit of breaking the cycle.
Right.
You know, and changing patterns. And I think that, you know, I think some of us are, you know, afraid to voice the truth because it means that we won't show that we love our parents. And I don't think
yes.
that we have to compromise the truth and love. I think that there is love and truth. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Well, I appreciate you saying that because sometimes I wonder if I'm right in my head sometimes. That the old mother saying comes back in my head sometimes. But, yeah.
Well.
And I still have a way to go. I know that. But I know that somebody out there is listening and they're thinking, I don't really want to say that because I had good parents. Well, we all have good parents. But that doesn't mean they're always right in what they do. Because someone taught them how to do it and it could have been the wrong way. Until we see the truth, until we have the wisdom of the truth, then we don't correct it. And years and years ago, they would teach people to lay with their infants for 8 days after they had their babies in the bed to lay with them, okay? Today, because we know the truth, some mothers fall asleep and roll over on their babies. It can kill a baby, you know. So today we teach them to put them in a crib or in a safe place. So today mothers don't lay with their kids, their babies in their bed, their infants in their bed with them. So until we see the truth, we don't correct it. But we have to be open-minded to see the truth. And a lot of times, just like the young gentleman that had a family who was murdered and taken away from him, his son was taken away from him, he couldn't see the truth. He wasn't open-minded because he thought somebody was trying to rob him, to get in his house and rob him. And he told the young man to go away, even though that was his son. So he failed to be open-minded toward it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. It does make sense. It does make sense. But I also, you know, think that to your point about you just had also admitted, you know, sometimes I feel, you know, even when I'm speaking the truth, I, you know, like second guess myself a little bit, which of course we do. Like, should I be keeping this to myself? But to me, that is the secrecy. And I always say this, you know, we always were bound to secrecy. And your mother hushed you, obviously, as a very, very young girl for speaking the truth. And it's the secrecy that is the most it's the most proliferative enabler of abuse. It's secrecy. And so, you know, it is bold, and it takes courage when we speak the truth. You know, to break that silence, it feels uncomfortable. It does feel uncomfortable. But I always tell my, you know, what you said to yourself too is, what is the alternative? And your truth is going to help your own siblings. It's going to help potentially other victims. And you know you've witnessed there are other victims out there. So the truth is not a betrayal. It's, you know, molesting a child is a heinous crime and it is against the law. And if it were brought to light at the time and if it was brought into the law, and it had been dealt with your grandfather, there was a criminal record and it would be public knowledge. So we have to remember that these are crimes. These are heinous crimes. And if someone wanted us to tell a different story, they should have given us different material.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
Right,
so,
and we have to be open-minded to understand it. And, you know, I disagree with so many things today in life. It's just, it's horrible the way people stay stuck in their generational sins, and that's what that's called, is a generational sin. It's where you learn one way, and that's the way it's going to be, and nobody can tell you any different. and I don't know, maybe I'm saying the wrong word, but I call it a generational sin. My parents were Appalachian Mountain people. The Appalachian Mountain people came from a tribe where they believed in marrying family only. And this is where my mom and dad's mindset was, rape that came from. They came from that. Their generational sin led to further sins. So, it's a cycle. And we have to break it. The only way to break it is having an open mind to the truth. And I hope that I can share that someday with other people. I don't know. I'm hoping so. I know that I help people today to seek recovery through holistic health, not doctoral health. I don't believe in giving someone a pill just so they can get off alcohol or get off drugs. I think that just creates more of an addiction on something else. But I help people to seek nutritional advice from professionals. Our nutrition is basically the culprit of a lot of our illnesses today. So, you know, doctors are great, but they can lie to us by giving us the quick fix pill that destroys us eventually. So they destroy your kidneys and all that. So I help people with nutritional advice today and help them seek recovery through resources, professional resources. And eventually I want to be able to build a home where they can get holistic health and advice and recovery through going through their inventory or their timeline or whatever you want to call it and getting to their truth and talking about their truth. And that's what I want to build. We have homes today like that.
I have no doubt that you will be successful at that. Before I want to continue on this conversation about your plans for the future, and I know you just gave us a glimpse, I wanted to invite Kim back in because we only have 15 minutes left of the show. One more time, my co-host Kim, I'm sure she has a question or a comment for you.
Okay.
So, Kim, if you'd like
okay,
to
sorry
ask.
Sorry about that. I'm here.
Okay.
Well, you know, thank you, Jerry, for just everything that you're sharing tonight and for your heart to want to break that generational, you know, tie that has been in your family for a long time. And I feel that too. I know that for a fact it was generational in my family, but that doesn't make it excusable.
Right.
And all it takes is one person to decide that we're going to make a difference and we're going to change that trajectory and we're going to, you know, try and raise healthy, strong people. And so do you have children? I'm sorry, I might have missed that. Do you have any children?
I have three children. They're all grown.
That's right. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have two sons and a daughter. One son has recently went to heaven.
I'm sorry.
He passed on the 21st of July. He was 39. And then I have my daughter living today and my youngest son living today. And they live... Well, one just moved to Greenwood, and the other one is on the east side of Indianapolis. So I have one granddaughter and a grandchild on the way, and that's it. That's my family. I was very blunt with my children when they were young because I didn't want them to move on in life without realizing that they could be messing up a young child if they have a child too young. So I just told them, don't bring home babies to me. You know, I didn't raise children to have babies. I'm sorry. I'm not your grandma. I'm not like your grandma. I want you to go out and have your life, live your life first and get yourself grounded in it, you know, in a healthy mindset, you know, That was my deal. And my mom, all she wanted was grandbabies. And I knew that from the time I was 12. She implanted that, you know. She implanted that. You're gonna find a good husband one day when I was young. You're going to have plenty of boyfriends and da-da-da, you know. I didn't implant that with my children. I didn't want them to go through that type of setting. I wanted them to get into their adulthood before they had babies and at least know what they wanted to do in life. Yep. So many times parents just don't understand that. And we have babies having babies today. And I didn't want my children to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm proud.
Well, I felt the same way. I just remember thinking, get them out of their teenage years. And then that was my whole goal. Get them out of their teenage years before they have a baby.
Right.
And, I
bluntly told them, don't come home before you're 18 with a baby in your marker, okay? I don't want to hear it. I got them all three
so
in college.
They can't have a relationship.
Right. Yeah. I just couldn't let them do that. I got them into college. I made sure they was in the college, which my parents, we weren't taught that education was important with us three girls, with my family. Yeah. We weren't taught that education was important. Yeah. In fact, I remember thinking, Mommy, I want to go to college someday. And she just looked at me and she says, we don't have money for that. And I just looked at her and I said, well, so all you're worried about is you just want me to have grandbaby. You just want to have grandchildren, right? And, well, of course I want grandchildren. I was like, how am I going to raise them without it? You'll be fine without it. You don't need education to do that. Okay. And that's the mindset she was in. So I can't fix that. So I fixed my mindset on raising my children and to know that education is important. My daughter paid for her college. Before she went and took her classes, she had cash. She did not get loans. So, and I know you're breaking up a little bit. I know you're speaking because I can hear the little jitters. So.
Wow, that's great for her and good for you for breaking that cycle. Thank you so much for sharing with us this evening.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I know I've kind of wavered here and there, but the little stories kind of help put the point at the end of the casting. I just think it's very important to have education.
Sounds great.
And I think that the more we talk and the more stories that get out, the more educated people will be.
Oh, absolutely, Jerry. Absolutely. You know, your stories have brought, you know, your anecdotes have really cemented a story tonight, and it's given us a really great, you know, painting and picture, if you will, you know, not only of your own experience, but a lot of what, you know, the cycle looks like and the process of, you know, getting to recovery looks like and all of the, you know, heartache and really victories along the way. And I've learned a lot from your testimony tonight, and I'm very, very inspired. And sometimes it's nice to know that you're alone.
Well, it's nice to know someone at your standpoint to understand what I'm saying. Sometimes I think I'm just a very confused person, but, you know, that's just part of my disability. Where I've got to be more self-confident. So I've enjoyed coming on tonight. I thank you.
Well, we so appreciate having you and very much looking forward to you as a NASCA family member and also in the future, your future plans to build, you know, a home for teens, young adults, women, you said specifically, a safe home, a resources for those that have had similar experience to yours. It sounds like you want to be part of the solution and you want to give back, and that sounds amazing.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm going to try. It's going to take a lot of money, which means I've got to start working on that. And there's a lot of homes out there that are doing the same thing, but we just need more of them. These homes have long waiting lists, and sometimes these women can't wait. They're homeless, and they get trapped, and they wind up back out on the streets, in the alleys, on drugs again, or drunk, or beaten, or trafficked. Which is very sad today, but it happens. So that's just one thing I want. It happens.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing about more of you and from you in the future. I know that I mentioned that on the NASCA website and under today's show, the show will be archived and it can be accessed on the NASCA website. On the main page, it's www.nasca.org. But Jerry, do you have any other handles that you would like to share with our listeners tonight?
Well, actually, anyone can reach out to me on Facebook, and then I'm on Twitter as well, Geraldine Collum. That's my full name, and my real name is not a cast name, so. Sometimes I wonder if I should put that out there, but at the same point, I don't want to be a false person. So that is my true name, Geraldine Cullum. And you can find me on Facebook with that name. And on, let's see here, what else do I have? I think I have LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm on NASCA now. Bill Murray's going to put my name on there as an ambassador for the Indiana area. So I'll be working to volunteer, hoping to start a recovery group. Don't know what it's going to be called yet, but we'll see what we can come up with in the future. And I'm hoping to do a co-hosting with Barbara Joy Henson. I want to do a co, I mean, me and her both, I want to get us to both be on a program, possibly a live Zoom or something like that. I don't know if she'd be interested in that, but I'm hoping so. I have that idea that I've gotten written down that I'm going to talk to her about it. But actually, that's about it, you know, for right now.
Well, that sounds like a lot, and I have no doubt that you're going to achieve all of that. And, you know, NASCA is always here, and lots of volunteer opportunities within NASCA as well to accomplish some of those goals. And I know, and I assume that you've talked to Bill about some of those opportunities.
Yes. But,
yeah. So I wanted just to thank you, Geraldine, for coming on this evening. And I also wanted to thank my co-host, Kim Lakin, for being on here with me this evening, and a couple of just quick reminders for our listeners. So this has been the Stop Child Abuse Now, which SCAN, stands for SCAN. This is show number 3006. It is Monday, September 12th, 2022, and about 30 minutes after the show ends, the show will be archived. You can access this archive as well as over 3,000 other archive shows at www.NASCA, which is NAASCA.org. That can be found on the front page of our website. I did also want to mention that NASCA is a fully funded nonprofit through its membership. We are a 501c3. So we rely on the donations from our members and others that wish to support NASCA. We don't have a high overhead, so even a few dollars help. So at the bottom of the main page of our website, there's a contribute button that takes you right to PayPal, and we are happy to receive even a couple dollars. It's much, much appreciated. NASCA has 5 shows a week. So this is Monday night show. We have a full show schedule this week. Tomorrow night, we also have, Felicia Johnson, which is our Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have Survivor Professional Nights where it's an open mic call-in. You can call in and ask a Survivor Professional a question or a comment related to NASCA's mission, which is addressing child abuse, intervention, prevention, and recovery. Wednesday night, we have a special guest. We have Christina Jones from Chicago. Thursday, we have Dr. Jaime Romo, another Survivor Professional evening. And on Friday, we have, Aloysa Chong from Fort Lauderdale. So we have a full schedule. The show is 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. So the funding from the donations goes to the shows as well as all the other NASCA services. I wanted again to thank Geraldine for coming on tonight. What an amazing person you are and an incredible story, and I know that we are going to be hearing more from you in the future. Again, I wanted to thank Kim Lakin, my co-host this evening, and I wanted to, as I always sum up on the shows, I wanted to say what I always say, which is that there are enough adult eyes and ears on this planet to keep every single one of our children safe. So if you see something, if you hear something, please say something, do something. It is our moral responsibility to do so. That being said, I wish you all a very, very good night. God bless the children. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Kim. It was a great show. Thank you, Jerry. Very appreciative. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.